Welcome to the show that gets Christians thinking about faith and politics. Get ready to challenge the status quo, expand your imagination, and tackle controversy head on. Let's stand together at the intersection of faith and freedom. It's time for the Libertarian Christian Podcast.
Greetings, you're listening to the Libertarian Christian Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and a member of the Christians for Liberty Network. And on today's episode, Beach is the Word, because we're joined by Finley Beach, the author of the Managed Paranoia series of books, and also a regular attendee of LCI's book club, which is where I had the pleasure of meeting him. And if you'd like to meet him, you might want to sign up for the book club, because he's often there. Finley, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
So what is the Managed Paranoia series about in a nutshell? We'll start with that, because you're an author. You've been writing this book that has some libertarian themes. So let's do the kind of a brief synopsis first, and we'll start asking the questions about being an artist and a libertarian in the current climate.
Okay. Sounds great. So actually, I'm an author as a moonlighting project. I actually have a job where people rely on me and they pay me. So fortunately, I don't have to make a living as a starving artist. The first book that I came out with was in 2022, and it was Managed Paranoia. I realized very quickly that my idea for the book was not going to be able to fit in one book. So I determined it was going to be a trilogy, just wrapping up the third book. And unlike Douglas Adams, my trilogy is actually going to be three books. And the idea there is that it is set in a near future world. So we have technology, politics, faith. That's an overarching theme throughout the series. The idea is that a strong story can communicate some Christian values and also some libertarian ideals. And I had a lot of fun writing these books, but the overwhelming importance of it is the story and the character development. So it doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's not just a bunch of, preaching libertarian utopia. It's living in a struggling dystopian world, if you will, and trying to figure out how to understand how we move through life with interacting with other people, and hopefully a very compelling story as people read it. So,
well, you mentioned the not being a starving artist, which I'm glad to hear. And it made me think of, there was a book I'd read some years ago called Real Artists Don't Starve by Jeff Goins. And he gives some sort of suggestions, especially kind of living in the current age that we live in for kind of how to make it as an artist. And that was kind of one of the places where I'd first read, and this makes sense, but just kind of having it written out was helpful. Like, kind of a don't quit your day job thing. Like there's this attitude some people have that, like, I'm going to put 100% of what I'm doing into this, and we're just going to see what happens. And I'm either going to fail miserably or I'm going to succeed. Right. And some people have, been lucky and made that work. But the good money is on, have a day job, pay your bills, feed your family, and then sort of find time to do this stuff on the side. And so I've always been kind of especially after I read that, was like, okay, I've really got to, if I want to do something else that I love, I got to figure out a way to make it work first. And so it's kind of that sort of that slow build. First of all, is that your advice? And second of all, if you could do this, the writing thing full time, would you do it full time? Or is it really something you like to do more as a side gig, but you're happy with your day job?
Well, I am very happy with my day job. If we were to compare notes in terms of hours, I'm sure you would say I'm semi-retired as it is, but I'm getting to that time. I actually have 40 years in my career next year, and I am going to take a year-long sabbatical, and then my partner has said that he's going to rehire me after I come back. So So I'm planning on doing a lot of the writing. You know, my my profession is in healthcare, very analytical, scientific based. So fiction is a real distraction for me to write that. But I use a lot of my my experience through life in my writing, and try to communicate that in a way that's a compelling story in a thriller. I mean, basically, the four books that I've written are all thrillers.
Gotcha. Well, so I mean, would you say you're kind of then balancing, you know, don't quit your day job, but also don't quit your daydream? I mean, it seems to me that not very few people get to do what they love to do full time. But if you get to do it at all, I think that's kind of a wonderful thing to be able to do. I think there's value in making time for those things that you really like doing, especially those kind of creative things you can share with others, even if it's not paying all the bills. That's why I keep doing it, even though it isn't paying all the bills. Anyway. As a writer, I was going to ask kind of influences in fiction, and especially if any of them are libertarian. I caught the Douglas Adams reference earlier to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Although I don't know that he's necessarily libertarian, and certainly wasn't a Christian. But a very sort of, you know, funny sci-fi writer and, you know, great world builder. When you think of who's influenced you, who made you want to write, and specifically maybe focusing on in this kind of world of ideas, who do you feel like has done that well, that has made you, has been kind of a model for you?
I think, you know, that's one of the things that everybody has their book list. And, you know, most of us don't get to the end of it, especially when I do things like I've read 1984 by George Orwell maybe four or five times. And so, am I, you know, opportunity cost of not reading other books once, you know, perhaps. But Orwell, certainly a very big influence. I love C.S. Lewis from a Christian point, from my Christian heart. And he actually wrote, you know, quite a few sci-fi fantasy type books. And I don't know that a lot of believers have read them, but they're interesting.
Yeah. Well, there's a space trilogy, for example, and actually even That Hideous Strength comes to mind, because it is sort of a conspiracy theory book as well, right?
Right. I mean, everybody thinks of Screwtape Letters and the Chronicles of Narnia and that, which, you know, those are all very influential. I mean, excellent writer and storyteller. And does, you know, I don't think he's a libertarian, but I don't know what how many libertarian Christian writers there are out there that are doing fiction work right now. Do you know of any?
Yes, I know of one. It's a guy I've actually tried to get on this podcast a little bit. He wrote a book called An Enemy of the State. His name is F. Paul Wilson. And I read that book in probably late junior high or early high school. It was part of a kind of a series. I think it was called the Laneig Federation series. And I recently bought all the other ones, but at the time all I had read was that one. It was very influential on me. It was about it's kind of a space empire type thing. And then this guy who's influenced by anarcho-capitalist writers, and he starts attacking tax ships and dumping the money back on the people from the sky, giving the people their money back. And he calls himself Robin Hood. And he's got this sort of symbol that's like this thing here. It's like an ohm, but it's got a star in it. So I got that actually based on that book. So I'd recommend him for sure for anybody looking for like a libertarian or ANCAP writer. But so him, I'm not sure. I mean, you see these themes come up sometimes. And I think that's there is something sort of universal at times about, you know, kind of our suspicion of bad authority, that, you know, somebody can be kind of right wing or somebody can be very left wing and write a book about that. But the problem, I guess, is in the solutions, right? Like, we can sometimes recognize when you have a bad or evil government, although sometimes we justify it if they're on our side. But the question, I think, then becomes, okay, well, then what does it look like for it to be better? And so, but I think sometimes, you know, a libertarian, Republican, or a Democrat can, you know, watch Star Wars or something and go, yeah, I resonate with this anti-empire, you know, group. But then maybe in their actual politics, it doesn't always happen, right?
Well, that would be great. Maybe LCI can kind of start curating a list of fiction authors that kind of fit that mold, because it's hard to find. As another author that certainly influential is Ayn Rand, but you know, hardly Christian.
Yeah, so. not very much.
Not very much.
I did have my 12-year-old read. What was the short Anthem?
Anthem.
Yeah, and I've read Ayn Rand, and I don't find her a fun read usually, but I do like Anthem a lot. I think, and actually I watched with my wife not long ago The Fountainhead, and she was just like so annoyed we watched the movie version, which she wrote the script. Ayn Rand wrote the script for, and it's like, yeah, these characters do a lot of dumb things that don't make any sense, but like in Ayn Rand's world, they do sometimes. And actually, that'd be a question to sort of think about a little bit. As we're, you know, kind of moving forward and thinking about writing about issues and ideas, you know, Ayn Rand has this sort of tendency to do like the, you know, like, for example, in Atlas Shrugged, there's a 60-page speech.
Yes. don't write that way. Yeah.
Yeah. but there's this thing sometimes, I think about this because I like Woody Allen as a filmmaker, but like the critique of Woody Allen, it's a very fair one, is that everybody in his movies talks like Woody Allen, right? And so that characterization doesn't always happen the way that you like think it should. You know, everybody should be kind of distinct and individuated and have their own style and way of talking and thinking about things. And that doesn't happen so much in the Woody Allen movies. And so thinking about in terms of, I guess, those two aspects, kind of individual characterization, how do you kind of have your voice, but also allow the characters to be real, to not just be mouthpieces, and not just to be sort of, you know, what I want to say, this sort of like masks for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, ultimately, I get to choose, you know, the characters, but the characters, once they're in place, they create their own dialogue, they live their own life, they respond in their own way. I would say that's one of the things that I focus on in my writing, is to be able to develop a character in a natural way that suits the character. And, you know, I try very hard to do that. I wouldn't say that every single word out of their mouth is libertarian or Christian. However, it is true to their particular voice in their character arc. And without tension, you don't have much of a story. And so the mainstay of this trilogy, especially Managed Paranoia, is a character who is an atheist. And he's, you know, I don't think he's an activist, but he's proud of his cerebral intellect in terms of listening to all of the great atheists, and decided that that's the natural way that, you know, is basically that's what the society tells us to look at the world with, a worldview of there is no God. And so he's caught up in that. And then during the course of the series, he develops into a more thoughtful, more struggling with the ideas of faith, and the people around him certainly influence that, and the situations, you know, the high tension, the pressure situations that he finds himself in struggle, you know, make him struggle even more. So he's struggling right from the beginning to the end, and I think that's what we all are, aren't we? You know, I always question people who have never wrestled with God. I think that's, you know, it's very biblical. If you look at if you read the Bible, we see, the characters within it that were real people that struggled with their faith, with their situations. And I think if we can bring that through a fictional lens to the reader, it's pretty exciting. And that's a great way to communicate that, hey, we're all in this together. You know, humanity is struggling with what we believe.
I wonder about, as you spoke about that, I was thinking that this word came to my mind, which was empathy. And I think this is one thing that, you know, creatives, actors, writers, or whatever, I think to be really good at it, they have to be able to not just sort of think about who a character is and what's motivating them, but to sort of flesh them out, to be able to sort of empathize with what they're experiencing. And so, you know, there's kind of a way of storytelling that's very kind of modernistic as opposed to sort of postmodern, right? Where it's kind of, you got the good guys and you got the bad guys. And the bad guys are very simple, and they're motivated by different things than what the good guys are motivated by. They're motivated by lust or greed or whatever. And the good guys are very noble, right? And there's, I value actually a lot of that sort of simplistic storytelling. But at the same time, like, you know, what the shift has been kind of into postmodernism, I think, is to sort of see it from everyone's perspective. Now, the downside of that, the good side of that is you can develop very three-dimensional characters. You can understand more where people are coming from. You can say, well, you're not like just, you know, this evil alien demon or something because you disagree with me. You have your own reasons, and they may seem like very good reasons to you. Your motivations, you're motivated by things that are similar to what I'm motivated by because we're both human beings. We maybe see things differently, or maybe you have different information than I have or whatever. But thinking in terms of that empathy, I think that's maybe one thing that maybe sometimes when conservatives make very conservative art, is they can be sort of made fun of for really just doing the mouthpiece thing, right? Because they don't really ever understand where other people are coming from, the kind of God's not dead, you know, sort of black and white approach to things. So in thinking about kind of the role that empathy plays, I mean, is there actually even maybe some value in being able to say, like, as a Christian or as a libertarian, I need to understand where other people are coming from, and I need to be very careful to not caricature them, not just because it's not Christian and it's not kind, but also because if I don't understand where someone's coming from, I can't meet them where they are and try to talk to them in that place. There was a question there. It was just really long.
I mean, empathy comes into play. I think grace might even segue better into the idea of a character, you know, because one of the things that we tend to do is to have this idea. I mean, you look at the hatred on the internet between the right and the left and this person, that person. And it's like all this vitriolic debate and, you know, people taking sides, and I'm with them. I'm with them. We do it with countries and nations. And, you know, it feels like high school football to me sometimes, but there's a real dark element to that. And I think that as a writer, you know, you have to recognize that there is we are supposed to be gracious with other humans. We also need to be graceful with our characters. And I think that it comes to the point that, you know, I'm thinking of my evil villain. And I had a person who read my book, and after the first book, they said, "Well, I don't see how Gregory is ever going to be redeemed." And I'm just like snickering because I'm like, "Well, who says he's going to be?" But on the other hand, it's like there are characters in the story that do, you know, go through a redemptive period, and they do come out the other side. It's like the real world, though. Not everybody, you know, sometimes evil is just evil, and they're not going to find redemption. And the story that I write is very similar to the real world. In fact, you know, I would say it's near future sci-fi thriller is the genre that I'm writing in, but it's near future. So we're not talking warp drives. We're not talking aliens. We're talking like, okay, this is a speculative fiction work that is in the near future. And it rhymes very much with what we see today. So the human element is definitely there, and people are going through their own struggles.
Hey, everyone, it's Doug from LCI. As you may know, the team at Podsworth Media has worked with us for a long time, producing our content for most of the Christians for Liberty Network. A big part of that over the past couple of years has been using the Podsworth app to make our audio sound clean, level, and professional, even when the raw recordings were super sketchy, like this one you're listening to right now. Believe it or not, this recording was that bad before I ran it through the Podsworth app, and you can hear the full before and after demo yourself at podsworth.com. The app recently got a huge update, and it's now better than ever. So good, in fact, that it can take almost any atrocious voice recording and make it sound great. Here's how it works. It removes background noise, cuts down on plosives, fixes clipping when your gain is too high, removes clicks and pops, reduces reverb, improves tone, and levels out the dialogue so that you don't get any crazy volume jumps. Everybody hates that in a podcast. Using it is super simple. You just go to podsworth.com and click Get Started, drag and drop the audio files, open them right up from your phone's browser, customize your settings however you want. But honestly, the default works great for most settings. And here's a really cool thing. If you enter code LCI50, you'll get 50% off your first order. No account needed, just your email and payment. You'll get a download link in your inbox with cleaned up files. It's perfect for podcasts, YouTube videos, sermons, audiobooks, you name it. If your recording sounds rough, the Podsworth app can make it not only sound listenable, but professional. And remember, when you use code LCI50, you get half off your first order, and you'll also be supporting the work here at LCI.
Well, and to maybe just talk a little bit about, get a little bit into the plot stuff. I mean, part of this is after, you know, there's a pandemic that happens and government kind of gains more power as a result of that. So there's some connections with COVID there. And, you know, I think of, is it Robert Higgs who wrote the book Leviathan in Crisis, where he sort of talks about the ratcheting effect that government, when it takes power, it never gives it back. And there's this, I think, idea that I think maybe libertarians have that, and actually beach people in general, I suppose, political people, they sort of see the whoever is in power as this sort of insatiable dictator. And within 4 years, it's going to be, you know, the country's going to be unrecognizable. And I've lived through enough of that. I haven't been around quite as long as you, but, you know, I lived through the Bush years, and I was one of those people who thought Bush was going to, you know, bring in the FEMA camps and, you know, all that stuff. And things got bad and they got worse. And we had the Patriot Act and war on terror and torture and all that kind of stuff. But it never got quite as bad as we were worried it was going to get. And I think that's part of also the dynamic of our kind of political situation, is that you have this kind of opposition, right? You know, there's a lot of things that the left and right agree on, but when they disagree or when they're trying to undermine each other, there's a lot of tools that they have that they can do that. And so while I see things getting worse, it doesn't generally happen in this kind of linear sort of way. There's always these ebbs and flows along the way. And so when I read kind of dystopian, you know, fiction or whatever, I think about that a little bit. You know, because is the author saying this is the kind of the logical outworking of these kinds of ideas? Is he warning me about what he thinks is going to happen? Is he telling me what he thinks could happen? And so, I mean, as a writer, are you some, you know, sometimes, especially with comedy, that you tell the truth through exaggeration. Do you feel that you are in some cases maybe exaggerating where things are to sort of make it more clear what's underneath it or what the logic of it is? Or do you feel that, or do you feel like your warning is this is where we could be going in the very near future?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because, you know, as a writer, you need to create a little bit of gray area, or a lot of gray area. And so there's not a lot of, you know, black and white and just good and evil. There's a whole bunch of, like, dealing with life and figuring out, you know, what the characters are going to do next under the, you know, this, the hurricane that they're about to sail into, or dealing with overreaching government. And so we have all that. I mean, going back to, like, you know, now we can look back on 1984. You know, I can remember looking forward, or not looking forward to, but where 1984, you know, that was the birth of my first child. So I was an adult by then. And so, you know, we were like, well, we're not here. We're not here to George Orwell's 1984. You know, we dodged that bullet. And now fast forward, you know, I just see you mentioned pandemic, you know, the overreaching government, the lockdowns, the ratcheting up, the oppression,
social credit scores,
the level of control. I mean, so yes, I write to that, and I ratchet up my story, especially with, and we've not mentioned it, but there's a prequel to the Managed Paranoia series, which is called The Seventh Pawn. And that is actually more of a speculative fiction. I live in Washington State, and I was like, okay, well, you know, as it was, our governor had, I think close to 600 days of emergency. You know, we were in a state of emergency for well over the time that most every other state had, like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore, you know, and we were. So it was easy for me to see, you know, to write about, okay, well, what would happen if this just kept going? And so that book is very much about, you know, the pandemic and one of the main character, Julian, his wife died from a reaction to the COVID vaccine. And I find it fascinating because, you know, to you and me talking right now, it's like, wow, that's really provocative. Somebody died, you know, who's in this story. And I can't tell you how many people I've had who have read the book where it's mentioned on the dust cover of the book. It's mentioned twice inside the book how she died. And they'll come to me afterwards and they'll say, so how did Faith die? Yeah, I'm just like, well, maybe you should read the book again. But I think that goes with, you know, how do we communicate a message without preaching it? And I'm actually heartened by people asking me that because I think, okay, I didn't beat them over the head with it. They think that you know, they're reading the story is more important than the political overtones of the story, and that's what I really want to convey. And mm-hmm. So by them asking that question, I think, okay, I did a good job on the one hand of not beating them over the head with it, but on the other hand, did I communicate that maybe we should be suspect of mandatory vaccinations?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No. And that's the thing, right? As a creative, as a writer, as an author, your number one goal is to tell a good story, right? Yeah. And so, you know, sometimes I think there's a danger that things could get missed, right? We were talking about, like, you know, Star Wars. People watch Star Wars and cheer for the rebels, but then they're, you know, authoritarians in their in their real life, right? And so, you know, some obviously they're missing something, but there's also something there that can be used as kind of a rallying point or a clarifying idea, right? You know, this sometimes I, you know, maybe we don't think about this in the West, especially as kind of libertarians who are maybe very is it right brained or left brained or whatever, or very analytical. You know, we think in terms of propositions, right? You know, sometimes a story can be really clarifying for what we value or what is true, sometimes more than a proposition can be. Have you had any pushback from people who maybe liked the story but were put off by the political stuff, or is it just been either people who either liked the political stuff or kind of missed it?
Yeah, it's actually been pretty fascinating journey for myself. You know, just because I do have a day job where I interact with people a lot, and a lot of those people read my stuff because I say, hey, have you read my my books? And so they, oftentimes they will, and they often will come back to me, you know, with very favorable, like, viewpoints of the book and actually give me good reviews. And yet I know that they are progressives, you know, and I'm just like, wow, you know, because politically, I mean, I literally had somebody, which is so sad, but I had somebody talk to me about how, oh, they wish the bullet hadn't missed, you know, and you know who I'm referring to, right? And I'm just like, my jaw drops and I think, wow, that is the worst thing, because I can't even think of that, you know, your worst enemy. Do you really want them to be assassinated? And yet, you know, they openly espouse that to somebody who's their provider. And yet that same person reads my book, which is to the right of center for sure, definitely Christian oriented and libertarian in its simplicity. And yet they will say very positive things about the book. And it surprises me, because I'm like, I'm not sure I want you on my side here, just knowing where they're coming from. So I don't know. Again, that goes with the, is that good storytelling, or is that just me not communicating my viewpoints?
Well, what I wondered is that maybe when you read a book, the author is kind of the God or the I, the moral I. He kind of tells you what's right and wrong in that world, right? So you could, in theory, write the same book from the perspective of the villains and, mm-hmm. and make it make sense from their perspective. And the reader might be able to follow along with you and say, okay, well, within this universe, the moral framework is this. This is where the author's coming from. This is the clarity. And so we're going to see it from that perspective. There is something about the storyteller being the moral voice, which is why political narratives can be so dangerous, right? And so maybe that's the thing, right? We watch Star Wars or something. We say, okay, well, in this world, obviously the rebels are good, but maybe it's more complicated in the real world in which I live, right? Yeah. And I think that is the difference. I think possibly just because of the sheer number of narratives, right? You know, and I think that can be paralyzing if you don't have a singular moral framework. That's the other danger, right? You have a singular moral framework, but it's not very well thought out. You haven't listened carefully to the other side. And so then that's on imbalance. But at the same time, you can listen so much and be so empathetic that you've kind of brought yourself into a place of moral paralysis and you can't act anymore. But that's maybe a bigger conversation. But
Cody, I think you nailed you hit the nail on the head here, because fiction has the ability to, get in under the defenses. And I think that is huge in terms of, you know, and that's like, this is the way I'm communicating my libertarian Christian message, is through fiction storytelling. You communicate it in a totally different, more upfront way. I'm actually, the people that I'm hoping to reach aren't people that are going to, you know, click into the Libertarian Christian podcast. They're going to be people who are these progressives and the Christian nationalists, you know, and some of these that are going to have to, you know, have their brain kind of, the defenses need to be, the shields need to be dropped down, if we're going to use a Star Wars analogy, right? So we've got to get a way to get into their heads without being so overt about our message. And, you know, I'm willing to be that person that does that. And I do it through storytelling, which again, I think is a way to allow people to break down their defenses and get the message across in a way that's not threatening. You know, we do that with other things. You know, music is certainly comes to mind. You know, the message of I grew up in the 70s, so you know, it was like the rock, you know, still the best music that's ever been produced. And yet there was a message to all of those stories, and it did influence a whole generation.
Well, it was Russia's album, is it 2112, that was based on Ayn Rand's Anthem, comes to mind. And another way of saying that you're doing what I'm doing, but through fiction is you're doing what I'm doing, but you have talent, so that you are able to communicate it in a way that I can't. Well, another example popped into my head, though, of these kind of moral universe building things. The movie Tombstone, which I'm sure you've seen.
Have I seen that?
It's with Val Kilmer and, what's his name?
Yes. Where they have the shootout.
Right. Now, right wingers in particular love that movie. And it seems to escape them that the good guys in the movie are gun grabbers. They shut down the right to bear arms within the community of Tombstone because they're trying to stop the bad guys, the cowboys, from being able to carry their guns in, right? Okay. And so that goes right over their head. You know, they either just don't really think about it, or they go, well, maybe in this case it made sense, but they would never support it in any other circumstance, right? But you go along for the ride. But it can also shape you, right? So like, you know, Upton Sinclair's The Jungle is an example you always sort of hear about, you know, art or literature changing politics or changing culture. He wrote this kind of scathing book about the meatpacking industry, and it led to the creation of the Food and Drug Administration. And so, I mean, thinking a little bit about, like you said, that difference between you and I, that you as an artist can express those kind of values that we share and maybe change minds of people that charts and logical argumentation might not reach because you tell a story and it clicks for them in a way that it might not have before, right? So, I mean, do we, if there are any artists who are listening right now, writers who are listening right now, would you say that they have a, maybe not an imperative, but that's what I'm looking for, an opportunity maybe to be able to use their talents to enter into this conversation and not just sort of allow the arts to be populated by progressives?
It's interesting because I think you're right about the arts definitely have been populated, and that's why there's a whole lot of people who are having difficulty paying their college loans right now. I think going back to like, what is God's will for your life? I think everybody has to figure out that, answer that question. If it was so easy to just like, oh, write a story. So I think, you know, following your passion is certainly important as long as it's grounded in, you know, a spiritual framework that's in tune with what God wants for you. There was a time when there's no way. I tried writing a science fiction novel back when my kids were little. When my kids were your kids' age, Cody, and there was no way. I mean, the amount of time and, just the realistic aspect of sitting down and you know, writing for 20 hours a week, which is what I do now oftentimes, that just wasn't a possibility when my three children were younger. So, and I don't think it would have been, you know, as good a story, because now I've come to, you know, maturity in life where I've interacted with enough people that I have archetypes, if you will, you know, that I feel like I can write and do dialogue for, which 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, I wasn't able to do that. So I think different places in your life, and you know, for anybody who has the ability to be creative, and they're libertarian, obviously Christian first, libertarian second, I think, yeah, go for it. You know, try to jump on that passion and run it as long as God gives you the ability to do it. But for other people who maybe it's a time to wait and develop your ideas.
Thinking though, maybe the other side of that is the danger of backfire, right? So we've seen this with Disney, that they've started to lose money because they were so focused on certain kind of advocacy of certain points of view that it ended up being, it turned off a big chunk of their audience. Is there that kind of danger that advocacy can backfire, that politics and art can be bad business?
Oh, well, you know, they talk about like in writing circles, if you really listen to the people who are bestsellers and you know, just knocking them dead on the markets, they will talk about writing to market. You know, you actually use keyword searches and you find, what's playing now, what's popular, and then you write your book, your story to that. And you're going to do a lot better financially and have a lot more people, you know, find you. But, to me, it's like, well, that's not what I'm about. I'm going to write the story that I feel God has put on my heart, and I'm going to communicate that in a way. And the fact that I'm not having to earn a living through my writing, I'm able to actually write honestly. Now, the funny thing is, as I say, write honestly, Finley is my middle name. Beach is my pen name. So I do that, and I explain if I'm going to give, hopefully in the show notes, you'll put my email address or my website where people can actually sign in and become part of my twice a month. I send something out. Here's a shameless plug. But I do reveal my actual, like, what I do for a living and what my actual full name is and why. And I'll give you one of the three reasons right now is because I have a clinic and my name is on the clinic's title as a business name. And I want to make a separation between my fiction writing and my nonfiction writing. So if somebody does a search for Finley Beach, they're going to get me as an author. If somebody does my search for, doctor, that's a whole different part of who I am. And I don't want to reflect on, we have another doctor and therapists and technicians, and I'm not going to reflect my libertarian Christian ideals on them because I don't want to write in a way that holds me back. And I feel like if I'm writing as a healthcare provider in a community, I feel like I have a certain responsibility not to offend, to draw attention to my clinic in a negative way. So writing under a pen name is the way I achieve that. So I'm not trying to be secretive or anything.
That makes sense though. Your politics is not directly relevant to the work that you do in your day. Right.
So I have other reasons as well, which I share to my, the people who get my newsletter.
Gotcha. Thinking in terms of kind of, again, on the subject of putting kind of libertarian concepts into fiction. Do you feel like there are specific concepts like individuality or free markets that you find are easier to explore through storytelling than maybe like a direct conversation? Or has it made it clarifying for you to think about those things? Like, have you been able to answer, the sort of classic, anti-libertarian pushback, like how make roads and how pay doctors, more effectively through fiction? I mean, does it give you an opportunity to think about these things in a way that just having a conversation or telling somebody to go read Robert Murphy doesn't work?
Yeah. The how paid doctors, it's very close to home. So, those are questions that, we should be brainstorming all the time because those are very real. I happen to be more anarcho-capitalist, but I have friends who make more sense oftentimes as minarchists, And I think some of those, it's really good to have that conversation about, like the roads or some of, the common lands. But then you have to have the discussion about, okay, well, who takes the graffiti off of the bridges? We get into lots of different, I think that's what makes being a libertarian so fascinating is we're willing to just jump in there and start to debate stuff. And some of the stuff we have precedent for and other stuff where we are fictionalizing are libertarian Christian utopia, right? And so getting back, we live in an imperfect fallen world, and we're going to have bumps and grinds as we go. And fiction allows us to kind of explore some of that without getting hurt.
Well, I think it's that role of imagination. Were you in that book club, the LCI book club, The Prophetic Imagination?
No, I wish I was.
It's a book by Walter Brueggemann. And the concept there is kind of interesting, the way that the biblical prophets were able to speak about a potential world that was hard for their contemporaries to imagine. Like Isaiah and the lion and the lamb lying down together, or the beating the swords into plowshares. Sometimes just being able to communicate or write about that kind of world that we can't really, see in front of us, it opens up our imagination to sort of think about what that kind of world might look like, right? And so there's, I think, maybe some real value in the artist being able to sort of sit down, not just the theorist, not just the economist, but the artist to sort of say, here's what this kind of world might look like. To make it possible to think about that kind of world, so that it's no longer this question of, well, pardon me, how would that work? And I can't see that. You're being idealistic, right? Like if you can think about it and sort of flesh out that world, make it feel tangible and real, suddenly we have an alternative that's open to us that we couldn't think about before, right? I also find Brueggemann a little annoying at times because I think he's a little too liberal, but nevertheless, there was an interesting idea there that we can expound on in a little bit. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the kind of the Christian side of this. Faith is also a topic in your books, not just because there's a character named Faith. Also, loss of faith is a topic in your books, not just because there's a character named Faith who dies. Thinking about
recapturing that,
it's a loss of faith and a loss of faith. So I think that faith idea as well, obviously this, because you have faith and libertarian ideas, this makes your books a great fit for listeners of the Libertarian Christian Podcast, but I have to admit we're kind of a niche market. So have you had any difficulties navigating how to address that controversial issue, the Christian side of things, holding on to faith, that kind of stuff, on top of the libertarian issues we've discussed so far? Is it complicated to try to bring those things together in a way that makes sense? And especially because, I think that there's a lot of libertarians and Christians have in common, which is why this ministry. Obviously a Christian understanding of freedom differs from a purely political one. It's more spiritual and less, kind of focused on, political systems and, those kinds of things. How did you bring those things together, and was it messy?
Yeah, it's fascinating because when I have, I actually know in my community more Christians than I do libertarians. And, in my perfect world, we would be just Christians and we would have libertarian values. One of the things that I talk about to those Christians is, if we go back to the essence of, what was God's major gift in a sense to his people or humanity is, the freedom to choose, the freedom to choose Jesus, becomes the essence of, free will. I mean, we get to make a decision. And so for Christians who kind of lean towards that, we're going to make all the decisions, not just for our children, but for humanity or for the nation or the state, you get to that point where it's like, shouldn't we model God more and allow people to make their own way in this life instead of coercively manipulating them all the time? So I think Christianity in its essence is very allows for a very cohesive libertarian outlook on life. But I think it's missed largely, and that's why libertarians only get 3% of the vote in a Christian, predominantly Christian society, is we end up with Christians who put their stake into, you know, authoritarianism, both ways, right wing, left wing. We've got, those are the popular choices. This last election was like, you know, I was talking to my son. I'm like, well, we've got a choice between two police states that we're going to usher in. You know, we can choose Trump's police state, or we can choose whatever Kamala and the deep state want for us. And it's like, to me, you know, I guess that wasn't a very hard decision. Am I happy about it? You know, no, I lean to not want any president. And I've been that way my whole life. You know, I've not been happy with the choice, but sometimes I'm more happy with one choice than I would be with the other. And that's where I think, you know, this last go around has set us. I know I got off topic there. Apologize.
Well, it's okay. Well, I did have a thought there, and trying to grab it before it escapes. When you were speaking about, oh gosh, I think I've lost it, which is embarrassing to do right in the middle of the podcast. well, maybe what I'll do for now then. Oh, actually, no, I remember what I was saying.
Yeah.
What's that?
You can edit it out.
I suppose so. Yeah. I have to put it in the notes.
That's using me.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So here's what I was going to say. On the subject of kind of the overlap of libertarian and Christian, the official LCI position has been, and Norman, our president, will remind us of this from time to time, is that Christianity is not libertarian. That's kind of an anachronism, because libertarianism is a newer philosophy, and so Christianity predates it significantly. And so, but at the same time, you know, so we wouldn't want to say necessarily that to be Christian is to be libertarian if you're consistent or something. And I agree with that to a point, but it does seem to me that when we think about, like, as you talked about, this idea of choice and freedom, that that is such a central idea to the New Testament. There's this idea of really what people even outside of the political sphere would call voluntarism, right? Mm-hmm. That there's this idea that you actually are responsible to make your own decisions and not to force them on other people. And I think there's a question about what does that look logically? And that's when we start kind of putting meat on those bones. And that's where our debates about what a libertarian society would look like. And so there's always points of departure, and everything becomes very contextual. But there is something in the bones of Christianity, we'll say, that's very voluntaristic, and that I think really militates against a statist point of view. Even if you're not going to find, you know, Rothbard and the Sermon on the Mount, you know what I mean? I do want to ask you, because as we're kind of wrapping up here, you know, so your series is called the Managed Paranoia series, and there's three of them at this point. It's a trilogy, right?
Yes, the third actually going to be published here in next month or so.
Okay. Well, and I think we're a little bit ahead in our shooting schedule. So by the time this lands, I think it'll already be out. So people can get all three books, and they can also get the prequel, The Seventh Pawn, right? And so where can people find you? You mentioned a newsletter. And then also when we're done recording, I'll ask you to give me any links or anything else you want to add, but anything you want to say out loud right now, go ahead, as far as where can people find you and get more information, get the books.
The website is openthegift.com, and that will get you to a place where you can get a free short story about one of my major and most exciting characters, Olin O. And he created, it's funny, libertarian writing often ends up with people who invent motors for some reason. So Olin was part of the Madras Motor Empire. And again, you know, we're talking speculative fiction, but it's a fun story. It's a short story. if you sign up for my twice a month newsletter, you end up getting access to that short story. It's called Rhodium Tycoon. People can reach me at finn@finleybeach.com. And that's how you contact me.
Well, and just to be clear, you said it's a real trilogy and not like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series, but we've talked about four books and a short story, which I think matches up with the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy four book trilogy plus the short story Young Zaphod Plays It Safe.
Okay.
So I think you're a little more on that track than maybe you thought you were.
Well, thanks for all the fish.
Yeah. Oh, so long. Thanks for all the fish. Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate you making time to talk with us. I think there were some interesting thoughts here, and I hope that creatives who are listening to this have got some, you know, really some food for thought and some encouragement, especially if they're like you and I and can't quit our day jobs. But I hope there's some encouragement there. I hope folks out there will keep trying, keep making things. It's worth it. Put some good stuff out in the world, and if you're lucky, or you know, maybe in God's providence, if that ends up being a full-time gig, that's wonderful, and we're so happy for you, and we'll be happy to bring you on the Libertarian Christian Podcast and talk about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Libertarian Christian Podcast. If you liked today's episode, we encourage you to rate us on Apple Podcasts to help expand our audience. If you want to reach out to us, email us at podcast@libertarianchristians.com. You can also reach us at LCI Official on Twitter. And of course, we are on Facebook and have an active group. You are welcome to join. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
The Libertarian Christian Podcast is a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute, a registered 501c3 nonprofit. If you'd like to find out more about LCI, visit us on the web at libertarianchristians.com. The voiceovers are by Matt Bellis and Catherine Williams. As of episode 115, our audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.